Let's Talk America with Dr. Alan Keyes.
Welcome to IMTV. This is Let's Talk America. I'm Alan Keyes, and today my special guest on the program is Daniel Babinski. He's somebody I've known for a good little while now. He is strong in every possible way in his commitment to the underlying premises of this country. He is, like myself, somebody who takes seriously the fact that America was founded under the authority of God. And that therefore, when we get away from the kind of reasoning that acknowledges that authority as a guide, we are liable to get ourselves into serious trouble. I have to say that I think we have been in that serious trouble for some years. And the struggle that's going on right now is whether or not that struggle is going eventually to involve the overthrow of government of, by, and for the people. Before the show began, I was chatting with Daniel a little bit about this notion of being an election denier if you question the fraudulent nature of what you have observed going on in the election. And I think that's absurd. The idea that in the United States of America, it is somehow denying the election to question the integrity of the election, it doesn't have anything to do with the history of this country. I mean, come on, y'all, big machine politics in our urban areas, ballot box stuffing, false bottoms, all of these kinds of things have been things that have occurred, not everywhere and always, but enough so that you notice them in the course of American history, particularly when certain kinds of people get their hands on the apparatus of government. What we really should be asking ourselves is whether the Democratic Party is now not in the mode of denying self-government to its people. And whether people like my favorite would, for the moment on the other side would be Mitch McConnell. I have never, maybe I just didn't witness it or something, but when he stood up and essentially declared that the Republican Party had fielded a bunch of lousy candidates, I was breathtaking. Who ever heard of a party leader in the midst of the election telling the country that the party's candidates are awful? That struck me as something that ought to be ripe for an allegation of insanity. It's crazy. You don't do that. Why did he do it? Because he hates Donald Trump more than he loves the American people. Or because he has contempt for the voters. After all, they made the choice. So if you make a choice that he doesn't like, he is then going to badmouth your choice as if the American people aren't supposed to be involved, in charge. He is in charge. I think that mentality is now sadly pervasive. It's obviously pervasive in the Democrat Party because they believe in socialism and all this. You do recall, right, that all the socialist implementations actually overthrow government of, by, and for the people. In the case of the Soviet Union, they maintained the facade, and in Eastern Europe, they maintained the facade of some kind of election. In a lot of places, they don't even bother with that. It's just clearly dominated by whatever happens to be the socialist or communist party of the day. Are we going to be dragged into that future, or are we going to wake up in time? Daniel, welcome to the show. I think this election suggested that the need to be aware that this fraud has now become, I think, a mainstay. I look at Carrie Lake's situation. And I wonder to myself, Hobbs was a candidate on the ballot who, as Secretary of State, oversaw the election's integrity. Y'all don't think that that is crazy? I think that that's insane. That shouldn't be happening ever. It doesn't mean that Secretaries of State can't run for office, but it seems to me that they should, at the very least, step aside from the supervision of this aspect of their bureau, or better yet, and here's my idea, Dan. I think we actually need a Bureau of Election Integrity, and that we ought to posit it as existing at the national level and at each state level with a separate mandate to do nothing but assure the integrity of our elections. so that in every aspect of the process it will be respected. People should be recruited for that bureau on the basis of understanding that the penalties for any kind of connivance at any kind of fraud will be brutal. That people will see themselves relieved of their liberty and perhaps even more, depending on how egregious the situation is. But if we don't maintain the integrity of elections, we're quietly allowing the overthrow of this form of government. It turns into an absolute sham. And I think we're very close to that point right now. Am I crazy?
Well, I'm not sure I agree with the idea of a federal and another federal agency to oversee elections. I do think that it is a severe problem in this country. I'm kind of curious as to how that would reconcile with the constitutional thing that the states decide how that the state's legislatures are supposed to decide how elections are run in their various states.
Whole paragraph. It is ultimately the Congress that is in charge of the features of the election process, not the states. Go look at what it says. The states have the first cut, but in every aspect of the elections except the place, the Congress can't tamper with the place. The Congress can then decide how the election is going to be conducted. The Constitution is quite clear on that. Okay. Now, I am not suggesting, by the way, that you should have a National Bureau of Elections. I said a Bureau of Elections for the national level and for the state level, so that the states would maintain their priority. The Bureau would be an adjunct of the government at the state level and then a separate one at the national level. But I think we need somehow to put the integrity of elections under severe scrutiny by people who are sworn not to adhere to, connive in, or be any part of any abuse of the election's integrity, and who will suffer mightily in their jobs and quite possibly in their lives, going to jail for a long period of time and so forth. Because at the end of the day, if you let it become the habit and rampant, as I think it is now becoming, that's the death of the republic. Because the key feature of our republic is election integrity, or at least voters deciding the election. If a little clique of liars and frauds is able to decide the election, we don't have government of, by, and for the people anymore.
No, you were spot on in your open when you talked about the fact that we've had election fraud in this country probably from the very start. You got people stuff ballot boxes and they want to go ahead and get their power. And I think, Alan, if we're going to take a look at the absolute root of this whole thing, it would be the adherence to the Christian faith when, you know, when Madison said that our Constitution was for a moral and religious people, it is wholly unsuitable to the government of any other. He's talking about the need for people to be Christians holding public office. Every state constitution had that in their constitution, that in order, if you're going to hold a state office in any state, the state constitutions had that information, that you had to swear that you acknowledged God in some fashion. And different states worded it differently, but that was a prerequisite to holding public office. That has dissipated, Alan. You know that. I know that. And I think that is at the ultimate root of our problem. And as I've had some discussion with some folks recently, as we take God's law out of our government and out of how we do government in this country, then we have to replace it with man's law. And of course, man's law is imperfect. And so we keep creating law upon law upon law and rule, and we have to augment that and add this in to make it, because we are not going to have the same overview and the same perspective that God's going to have. So I think at the root of all that is God, right? So we've moved away from, we've taken God out of society and his laws, and we've tried to put our own laws in place. And I think that's probably the bigger problem. So, I mean, if you were to ask me, I don't disagree with you that we need to have some oversight, because that's what man's laws are going to end up being, since we've taken God's laws out. But if we're going to try to restore the republic, then I'm going to, from every pulpit and every platform that I stand on, I'm telling the Christians out there, get out of the pew and get into the public square. because John Jay was very clear about it. John Adams was clear about it. We need to have Christians in office. And for pastors, Alan, and you've heard me say this face to face, for pastors to say, you know, this isn't our job, we're supposed to preach the gospel, I say you're missing the boat.
Well, see, I think you're missing the boat is exactly the right way to put it, because the boat was crafted in order to sail properly only under a flag that reverences the authority of God. We as a people have the authority to determine all these offices because, unlike the Marxist, Leninist, fascist, communist, Nazi ideologies, we were not founded on the worship of power. We were founded on the worship of God. And our adherence to a discipline of responsibility for election integrity, for instance, or any other kind of governmental integrity, is not something that is there because we fear the power of government coming after us and punishing us and so forth. It's because we love God and want to adhere to his understanding of just what it is that makes our liberty possible. I think part of the loss of this, though, is that people no longer start their thinking about our government from the Declaration of Independence. And I'm wondering continually why this is tolerated. People act as if the Constitution stands on its own. It was never intended to. It was always understood in terms of the basic premises and principles of the Declaration, without which there is no sense of justification for saying that people who might otherwise be considered highly unqualified to make the serious decisions required for government are entrusted with those decisions because of the character and conscience informed by their reverence for the will, provision of God, and the example of Jesus Christ. I think these things are intimately connected. And right. Even as a lot of people may come along who don't like the idea of reverencing God, it's a question. If you don't accept that discipline, what discipline is going to care for the integrity of our processes and of our own deliberations so that we won't be doing what the politicians encourage us to do? They have for years, as I have watched during the course of my lifetime, they have more and more said that elections are all about what the government has done for you lately and what the government is doing for you. No, they're not. Any king that acted as if the government was all about worshiping the king and giving the king money and giving the king satisfaction for the king's lust for power, that is why the founders rejected a lot of the elements of European monarchy when this country was started. Am I wrong?
No, well, you nailed it. Because you said that the Constitution, people believe that it stands on its own. No, you really do need to understand the Declaration. And I'm going to give another plug from my wife's Constitution class. And if I don't have a link for it up on my website, which is keeptherepublic.us, then I'll have it up there by the end of the day to where people can watch it. It's totally free. We don't charge for it. But she teaches the Constitution. It's a 12-hour course, Alan, and it's 6 2-hour sessions. And she starts the very first session not even talking about the Constitution. She spends the first half going over the Declaration, and this is why they put this phrase in. This phrase, when they say this little phrase right here, here's the months and maybe year of event that happened that caused this phrase to exist in the Declaration. So you have to understand the times and what was happening between, as you say, the European mentality and the what we had here in the colonies and now became states. You had to understand that. And then when she does go through the Constitution, she regularly refers back to why you see this in the Constitution. This phrase, this part of this paragraph is here because of this. And she goes back to the Declaration. This is why this is here. So you're absolutely right. You've got to understand the Declaration and what it's consisted of and why it's all there the way it is in order to understand the Constitution. But, you know, I had Dr. Mark Sherwood. He's also a host here on Brighteon, and he was my guest yesterday on my show here on Brighteon, Keep the Republic. And he ran for governor in the state of Oklahoma. He lost in the primary, but he was running, and he said something very, very astute. that I had actually heard from the state legislators where I am here, and that is you get elected to office. He says there's no requirement to understand the Constitution. He was shocked that people who were running for office and who had achieved office, who had won their elections, knew nothing about the Constitution except that it existed. And here they raise their right hand and they swear to uphold it and defend it, and they know nothing about what they're swearing to uphold and defend. That's scary.
So, because I can think of one major change in the Constitution that ever since I became aware of it and really thought it through, I know it sounds like it's something that's really all about respecting the people, right? But not with a full understanding of how the founders thought through the careful balance that has to be observed so that the people will not surrender their sovereign power. And I'm thinking of the 17th Amendment and the direct election of the senators. I think it was a huge mistake to take that out of the hands of the state legislature. And it also, by the way, doesn't exactly fit with the idea that they had, that you would leave the Senate basically intact as the elections for House and Senate occurred, so that you were not changing the water in such a way as to prevent continuity of ideas and purpose. I think the two things went together. They wanted the choice of the senators to reflect that more, that more judicious role the Senate's supposed to have, so that it is not swept along by currents that might be popular in this moment or that, but then fade, and so forth. And we've given that up. We've surrendered what was supposed to be the balancing act that allowed our form of self-government to remain on an even keel, right? And I has essentially turned it into a kind of free-for-all in money terms, so that if you are master of that money approach, and the guy I'm thinking about right this minute is McConnell. I think part of the reason the Republicans didn't do well for the Senate is that McConnell played with the process during the course of the election cycle because he hates Donald Trump. And
his the theory that they were throwing about, I heard several people discussing it, that McConnell actually wanted to not win the Senate. He wanted mm-hmm. the Democrats because then the chances of him remaining as the minority leader would be greater. Did you hear any of that?
I hadn't heard that, no.
No,
I think it makes sense, though, in light of my own sense of what he was up to, because he was obviously more self-seeking than a servant of the people, because he spit in the face of the people. If you say these candidates the people chose are an awful bunch, which is basically what he said, right? And you say that because you hate Donald Trump, but you're actually spitting in the face of the premise that the people rule ultimately. These people are supposed to be representing the people. Even in the Senate, you're not rulers. He acts like he should be the ruler of the process whereby the senators are chosen, and that's not the case in the Constitution.
Well, Alan, you've written legal documents, you've reviewed legal documents in your life, and you know that a lawyer sits down and he puts pen to paper, and every word has a meaning and a purpose for it being there. And when they wrote the Constitution, same thinking. I mean, they debated over all these phrases, and they're thinking about it. And it's interesting. Most folks overlook the phrase where you see in the Constitution reserved for the people and the states.
Mm-hmm.
And they think that people are just that the writers were just being redundant. No, very different thing. And I'm sure you know the people is represented by the House of Representatives that is supposed to represent the districts within the various states, and the people get their voice. Before the 17th Amendment, the senators were chosen by each state's legislature, and they were supposed to represent the interest of the state overall. So when they say representing the people and the states, or reserved to the people and the states, a lot of folks don't realize that they're talking about two very different things. One is the mm-hmm. populace and one is the state by itself. Mm-hmm. And the Senate was supposed to represent the state.
That's right.
And they, when they brought in the 17th Amendment, that went bye-bye, because now senators are chosen based on how much money they take from lobbyists.
Unfortunately, I think. And in doing that, you are actually thwarting the provision that was intended to stabilize
right.
government of, by, and for the people. Obviously, consulting the state legislatures doesn't mean you haven't consulted the people, because they're elected by the people. What you're consulting is the sense that there has to be a representative element. And who tries to pretend that the only judgment that's valid when you're talking about who represents the real heart and conscience of the people is going to be found by consulting the people themselves, rather than also consulting those who already represent their overall interest in right. the state and the way it is organized and the goals it has established, but also what is reflected overall in terms of the character of the people of that state and what their preferences are. I think we're seeing an illustration of that in the current effort now by the Democrats to take the Defense of Marriage Act and turn it into the Imposition of Marriage Act.
Interesting.
So that the national government is now going to impose upon each and every state the understanding of what marriage is all about, dictating, therefore, to religious conscience that they must follow the whims of secular conscience in our present time. That would never have been tolerated for a second at the time the Constitution was being written, because they knew it would have prevented the existence of the United States. They are now going to put the national government in the position of dictating what marriage is about to the states, mm-hmm. rather than reflecting what are the necessary variations in conscience and understanding that should govern that kind of thing in a society that has religious liberty as its first tenet of the Bill of Rights. It's insane, but this is what they're doing. Does that make sense? Well, I shouldn't ask that question, because in point of fact, I'm looking at the clock here, and we've got only a few seconds left in this segment. So I'll leave you to think about what I was just talking about for a second, because I think it's a mentality that shows that gradually government of, by, and for the people is being dismantled by elitist elements that exist in both parties. We'll be back right after this.
For your support of this platform, use the code BTV at checkout for additional savings. BrightEonStore.com.
Hello, this is Dr. Judy Mikovits, and I just so appreciate Mike Adams and Brighteon TV and giving us a voice back, as he's provided us the opportunity to talk. We're coming here from Anaheim, Pennsylvania, in the Clay Clark Reawaken America. So thank you, Brighteon TV, and Mike, appreciate you.
This was made possible by Brighteon.com. After being deplatformed by YouTube, I built Brighteon.com so that we can speak. All voices of dissent are welcome. Join Brighteon.com now. Post your videos today and start building an audience there where you will not be censored. Brighteon.com. Satellite phones have been wiped out globally because of the supply chain collapse and war in Europe. But a truly amazing new option has emerged, the BiviStick, which allows you to send and receive text messages using almost any mobile device without relying on cell towers at all. In a world where war, riots, or a power grid failure can happen literally at any time, the BiviStick and its two-way satellite messaging gives you the power to reach loved ones, to send emergency messages, or request a rescue. And to use this device, you do not have to register your name, and you don't need to turn on location services or reveal your geographic location. The battery life is several days in duration, and you can easily recharge it using a small portable power bank. There are only about 20,000 Bivy sticks that will be available in America this year. Get yours now while they're still available at SAT123.com. That's SAT123.com.
The Kelly Key easily converts your AR rifle to bolt action, allowing you to keep the rifle you love in assault weapon jurisdictions. The Kelly Key is a true fast drop-in solution. No permanent changes to your rifle. Import, transport, own, and have fun with your AR. Why the Kelly Key? Because a bolt action is not an assault weapon. Stay future ready from gun bans with a Kelly Key. The Kelly Key also lets you quickly and easily build your ideal hunting rifle, lets you build the quietest suppressed rifle, and benefits your long-range precision shooting. Available now at KellyKey.com with free shipping.
Welcome back. I'm Alan Keyes. This is Let's Talk America. And I have to say, the time goes so quickly, Daniel, especially when I'm talking to somebody as clear-minded as you are. And so many things get laid on the table. But during the course of the break, I was trying to formulate an overall way of putting the sense I have of our present situation. And when I use the word our, I am talking about the whole nation. But I'm particularly talking about the people of the nation. See, because we have to remember that this is supposed to be a government of, by, and for the people, carried on by folks who are our representatives. So they should present again what is in the conscience and heart of the people as expressed in those elections. That's why we need to be seriously concerned about election fraud, because you're overthrowing government of, by, and for the people. If you allow them to scare you out of carefully looking at whether elections have been fraudulently decided, if they're fraudulently.
Bridie on Radio and BridieOnRadio.com.
This is an amazing company that has sponsored both of us. And this is a way to have backup communications when the grid goes down.
Well, the situation became problematic, Mike, with the New Orleans, the latest hurricane, because people panic. And this is one thing that I've learned from being associated with the satellite phone store for over a decade. People will call and order 600 phones at a time.
What?
It's like this, Mike. Anytime there is a crisis, people want these. And ladies and gentlemen, they've created such a good deal for Mike's viewers, my viewers, our combined viewers, that this is the only way you're going to be able to communicate.
And that's the other beauty about these phones, is they can't track you because it's not talking to a cell tower. It's talking to satellites, you know, orbiting over the equator. So SAT123.com, folks.
The U.S. prepares to bolster troops in Eastern Europe, and tensions build with Russia.
Secretary Austin has placed a range of units in the United States on a heightened preparedness to deploy, which increases our readiness to provide forces if NATO should activate the NRF, or if other situations develop.
We have been consulting with allies in deployments and refining plans for all scenarios. We've always said we would reinforce our allies on the eastern flank.
Stay up to date on Bridie on Radio.
Treasure Island coins and precious metals. Mike Adams of naturalnews.com says 2020 has shown us that we must prepare for the unexpected. Gold and silver will be indispensable to your fiscal well-being during the coming financial pandemic. Shipments are delivered safely, discreetly, and securely right to your door. A precious metals IRA allows you to protect your retirement savings with the ultimate safe haven, assets of gold and silver. Gold and silver will be indispensable to your financial well-being. Your metals are held in the form of real coins and bars in an actual depository under your name and on your behalf. Simply visit BrideonMetals.com today. Gold and silver will be indispensable to your financial well-being. Shouldn't you at least look into it? Treasure Island coins and precious metals. We're here to help. Visit BrideonMetals.com today.
Take a stand against biased talk radio.
I'm going to take a strong stand against it.
And listen to Bridie on Radio, where we give you both sides of the story.
Thanks for your support of this platform. Use the code BTV at checkout for additional savings. BrideonStore.com.
Bridie on Radio and BrideonRadio.com.
Who adhere to the underlying premise, which is God endowed unalienable right. And I always have to explain a little further because of the way the word right is abused.
It is.
When you say God endowed unalienable right, you are not talking simply about freedom. So it's not God endowed unalienable freedom. No, it is God endowed unalienable right because it involves a use of freedom, because we have the choice under God, right? God gives us the choice to do wrong, as Eve unfortunately decisively proved in the biblical account. You can use your freedom to do wrong, to do that which goes directly against the provision of God. And that's a no-no because it brings such awful, lousy consequences behind it. That's the lesson one learns from the scripture. So when you say God endowed an alienable right, you are talking about liberty. That's why I think they used the word liberty. I'm so glad they did. So you could distinguish it from freedom, because liberty is the state of being actually free, not just free in your choice, but actually free, in because the consequences of your choice follow God's provision and therefore are likely to be sustained. And I think that that understanding is now totally lost, that in point of fact, we're dealing with something that requires that we think through what is right according to the laws of nature and of nature's God, according to the provisions of God, understood pretty much the way they were understood when the founders wrote the document. That means, doesn't it, that Christian people, when they approach the path of citizenship, ought to realize that under our system, the indispensable requirement is for a large cohort of people who accept that authority of God to be involving themselves in politics for God's sake, not just their own. And I don't see it. I think a lot of people are being encouraged to accept this phony lie of separation. Their pastors are giving in to the phony lie of self-separation. They're being encouraged to live as individuals according to God's provision. But when you go into the voting booth, you got to leave God and Christ outside. That doesn't make any sense to me. None. And it's destroying our country.
None. No, absolutely. I agree. There's a big contingent of people who are concerned about their longevity in office, that if they get elected someplace and they're liking the authority that they have and the influence that they have, and then someone comes along like a lobbyist and says, you know, or maybe a more senior seasoned, maybe more corrupt politician and says, look, if you don't support this legislation, we're going to make sure that you get primaried really hard and you're not going to get reelected. And it's really unfortunate that people succumb to that and they don't stand on principle. Thankfully, we have, and so here in my state of Idaho, we had last session 1.8 conservatives in a Senate of 35 senators in our state, our state senators. We had 1.9 conservatives. Now, I'm very proud and very glad to report that we have probably 14 or 15 very conservative senators. We really did a good job in this state getting constitutionally minded folks elected to the Senate.
Can I ask you a question?
Yes.
Now, am I wrong? Because I'm under the impression that your state is overall under the Republican label on the state side. Does that change is actually a change then that assures that a voice will be raised for this more, I think, consistent understanding that draws in premises of conservatism understood as also conserving the basic principles of the founding. Am I wrong?
Well, you and I probably need to have a whole separate show. Maybe I'll have you on my show. We'll talk about this. But the idea of being a Republican in this state is very tenuous at best. People call themselves Republicans because they know they cannot get elected as a Democrat. And so we have a very diverse set of value systems, even within the Republican Party. And like I said, it's a topic for its own discussion.
But that means, doesn't it, that you've been dealing with a situation that I'm more and more concerned about, which reared its head in a very explicit way in the course of this particular election cycle, because the Democrats made an open move to try to choose Republican candidates that they thought would be easier to beat, and therefore intervened with money and such like, and probably also by encouraging some Democrats to vote on the Republican side, register and vote on the Republican side, so that they could influence the outcome and get what they thought would be weaker candidates. And this is part of what also struck me about McConnell's thing. With that in mind, for a leader to explicitly say something that would second the motion of that effort to weaken the perception of who these Republican candidates were struck me as cooperating with that Democrat aim, and kind of proved to me that McConnell may call himself a Republican, but I think he is already working for the Democrats in the role that was true of opposition parties in Eastern Europe. They were step and fetchits for the communists, step and fetchits for the rigorous ideological socialists.
Yeah.
We'll see.
But you say he's aligned with the Democrats. I say he's aligned with the statists.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's a uniparty. They can put whatever letter they want after their name to get elected in their particular district or state, but they're a statist.
Yeah.
And that's the problem. Well, thankfully, you know, we have in this state a very red constituency, blue management team, because as you just described, we had the very establishment Republicans encouraging Democrats to switch parties and register as Republicans so that the quote unquote extremists didn't get elected. And that's what happened in this state. The people who stood up for the Constitution, that stood up for liberty, that stood up for what they wanted when they created this country, were all labeled as extremists. Mm. And the media was part and parcel of the extremist Republicans. It was everywhere. And so all you Democrats out there, if you want to keep this state, you know, sane, you go ahead and you cross over and you register as a Republican and you vote. And we know this happened. A very good friend of mine was running for the state house. For the state legislature, and was making phone calls, and you go down the Republican list, right? And you call the Republicans who are registered Republicans. And she couldn't believe the number of people in her district, which is a very, leans more Democrat than it does Republican, but she's calling the Republicans and she's trying to, you know, campaign, and she couldn't believe the number of people who registered Republican who were Democrats. Why would I vote for you? And just vitriol. Mm-hmm. So, that happened a lot. In fact, we even had registered Republicans come out and endorse a Democrat attorney general in this state. Thankfully, Raul Labrador, who was a U.S. representative for us for 8 years, won handily 62% over this Democrat that the former governor's wife endorsed, the former Supreme Court Chief Justice endorsed, because they're all establishments. You don't have true.
Well, see, I've got to confess that what you're bringing to mind has its example at the national level now in Liz Cheney, doesn't it?
Oh, absolutely. Exactly.
She seems to be somebody who's still wandering about trying to get people to think that she's a Republican. But now she seems to be totally aligned with the Democrat effort to suppress those who are loyal to the Declaration premises that give us our self-government, and thoroughly statist in her understanding of things. And I think we really need to work hard to start to put this across, that the real divide is not between Democrats and Republicans. It's between those who believe in government of, by, and for the people, and those who are now serving to impose an elitist clique, whether it's Democrats or Republicans, who then get to make the decisions that had by the founding been left in the hands of the people, but which they are now trying to usurp. And the second part of that is, first, I think Christians need to think through what's happening with their imposition of an understanding of marriage that takes no account whatsoever of Christian conscience and biblical conscience is an example of the future we're headed into. Because in point of fact, the Defense of Marriage Act had a different flavor. It was not trying to impose something. It was trying to defend something against imposition. But now the Democrat approach with their marriage proposal is to force people to violate their conscience before God and accept an understanding of marriage that violates it. And that flies in the face of what you were talking about in the beginning of the program. Those rights not delegated. Where is marriage and the understanding of it something delegated to the prerogatives of the national government. I can't find it. Did I miss something?
No. Well, we've discussed this on your show before, I think, and that is that the whole idea of a marriage license came from the racists in the South who didn't want white people marrying black people or vice versa. And so they said, well, in order to get married, you have to have a license. And they would deny those licenses so that whites couldn't marry blacks. It's just very narrow thinking. But that is the start of it. So before that, the church said, you're married, you're married. You got married before the judge, right? Or before the pastor. And so, yeah, that's where it was. But then the state has no business in marriage.
See, and I think people forget that insofar as you signified anything to the government after that marriage took place, it was simply to make sure that the government would respect the integrity, show integrity in its respect for that marriage bond. It wasn't that the government could come in and dictate or reject the quality of that marriage bond because it didn't suit the government's understanding of what it took to be married. That was decided in the sight of God, not in the sight of government.
Yeah, I am of the belief, Alan, that that until Christians, as I said earlier, get up out of the pew and get involved in the government, because that's what this government was designed to do. You can sit and enjoy all the fruit of what the government provides you, of what the liberty and the freedom and all that was provided for us that our founders tried to set in place. You can sit and enjoy all of that and not do anything to maintain it or keep it, and it will get stolen and it will crumble. So this is where I want to say to all pastors out there and people who are in leadership roles in churches, stop saying that that is too political or we don't get involved in politics. If you don't get involved, this freedom that you currently enjoy will disappear. They will take it from you.
See, I've always thought, though, and it's not true of every pastor, but I think it's true of a lot of them. If you are somebody taking that view, I always find myself tempted to examine what else is going on with you, because I'm thinking to myself, if you think that we should allow the government to dictate our fundamental attitudes towards things that God has decided, right, then I'm going to be suspicious that you're not really in it to serve God, because that doesn't serve God. What that serves is making sure you get the pews filled and get the baskets passed and filled with money that can sustain you and so forth and so on. And I'm very suspicious that a lot of people who say we don't get involved in politics are people who essentially ignore the fact that the premises of our citizenship are actually premises that, rooted in the Declaration, begin from the assertion that we are endowed with certain unalienable rights, which is to say a sense of what is right, that accords with the endowment of God, not with the provisions of human avarice and greed and power mongering. And that's a role that Christians have to play if we're to maintain the foundations of our country and our way of life. And if you back away from it and Christians aren't out there continuing to demand respect for it, who's going to? It seems to be a ripe situation to get where they are now trying to push us, where the government claims authority over things like marriage that it simply does not have and should not be allowed to impose.
Yeah. And people have become accustomed, by going through the institutional schools, that the government says and therefore you must do. And to me, around my part, we describe schools as tyrant factories. You're either going to create tyrants or you're going to create cogs and wheels. People are being taught to, stand up when the bell rings or sit down when the bell rings or do this, and you line up and you do it. And the whole idea of independent learning has disappeared, and we now have indoctrination camps. Mm-hmm. So we're teaching people to listen to the authority and not to question the authority. You get in trouble if you do. So, you're absolutely right, Alan. You need to be able to say, no, government, you don't have that. And they're going to argue because they want to sustain their own income and their own power and position. But we need to go, no, we've done our homework. We've looked back into this, and you don't have that authority.
See, and I think it relates also to something that was kind of drummed into my mind years ago by my professor, Harvey Mansfield Jr., because he spoke a lot in various ways about the importance of initiative when you're dealing with government and political affairs. It matters who is approaching the situation and has a clear sense of where you're going and therefore is willing to start the ball rolling first in that direction, who takes the initiative, seizes it, as it were, and then carries it along. When this country was founded, Christians took the initiative. It was started by people who were insisting that we would not be dictated to by a government that did not respect what in our conscience we thought was the government of God. And they were people who in the first place had taken the initiative to get out from under the close rule of that kind of government by coming to the new world, by establishing communities where they would be free to worship according to their conscientious understanding of what God required. I think part of what's endangering the situation right now is that there is no passion-driven, and when I say passion, I mean in a positive sense of deep commitment to and understanding of right according to God, that now leads Christians in America to take the initiative, to be the ones who start the thinking about what needs to be done rather than just looking for it somewhere to follow up. Because you, if you don't start from the premise of God's authority, you're not going to end with laws and a rule in terms of government that respects God's authority. And I think that's where we're headed, even though I believe there's still a critical mass of Christian people who, if they took the initiative, would once again seize the leadership in a good way in our politics.
So let's just use that as a springboard to say, people in the pews, stand up, take initiative.
Mm-hmm. Be the ones who are, in fact, looking for ways to articulate the path we need to take, because it's the path that accords with God's understanding of law, not the passionate human understanding of ambition or advantage. I think that's what's going on now. They're basically resolved that we should think in terms of what's to our advantage. And sometimes, as we know from Christ himself, you walk a walk that isn't necessarily to your advantage, because it is the walk that is going to achieve the purposes of God with greatest effect. And I think a lot of times now we're not being encouraged to think of ourselves as citizens in terms of what works to the advantage of God's provision.
Hmm. Interesting. Alan, if I may, as we wrap up the show here, I just finished my latest book, which is called Love Like Jesus. And it's pre-pub. It's not in actual print yet. It's still getting its all final touches on that aspect of it. But the content of the book is done. And I really want people to read this and understand what it really means to love in accordance with 1 Corinthians 13. And it's a very practical approach. And you can get a free copy. All you got to do is subscribe to the Keep the Republic website, which is keeptherepublic.us. If you go there, you can subscribe. And one of the benefits of that is you get a copy of that book, a PDF copy of that book, Love Like Jesus. And if we're going to be in the public square and represent God in the public square, then we better do it with some integrity. And this is not a preachy book. This is an analytical book, but I want to offer it to your viewers free of charge. All they have to do is just subscribe to get on my mailing list. And if they want to unsubscribe later, that's fine too. Don't care. But I want to get this book out there so people can find out what it means. What was the greatest commandment anyways?
Mm-hmm. To love the Lord your God with your whole heart, soul, mind, and strength, and to love your neighbor as yourself on account of that love. So you put God first, and that's the real exemplification of love, because who loves better than God, who has made all the provisions necessary that we should not only come into existence, but live out that existence in a wholesome fashion. And it's only when we reject it ourselves, as sadly Eve did, that we get into trouble. I hope everybody will read this book. It sounds like exactly the right way to approach it. It accords with something I'm working on, which I've titled provisionally Right According to God, because I think at the end of the day, it puts first what ought to be the real standard in light of which we take the initiative to do right according to his wisdom. Ponder that. We'll be back after this.